Chapter 12. Iskaker did at least go hunting for them when she had understood what had happened, and helped to dig a channel from the quicksand pit, which drained the water into a rock basin, where they might drink. So she was not useless, but she was still inclined to be critical, and particularly of their having lost the trail. Temeraire informed her with some asperity that he would have liked to see her do better, with a firestorm and a typhoon to be managed all at once. If it had not precisely been a typhoon, it seemed far too mild to call it only a thunderstorm, and not at all reflective of the experience. And added, "And there was the third egg to be managed also at the time."
"Which was nowhere near as good an egg," Iskaker said disapprovingly, "as anyone could tell, only looking at it, and now you see what has come of it. Finish eating and hurry up, then, as we are bringing you along," she added to Kulingile, "which I do not understand."
Kulingile could not really be accused of eating slowly. He was taking everything which had been left in gulps, the very limit of his capacity. His sides had collapsed into their odd folds again only a little while after they had first swelled out, but twice more during the effort they had inflated and then crumpled once more. The mane was anxious, but it did not seem to hurt the dragonet, Temeraire thought. At least Dorset had not said anything dire, though he had examined Kulingile closely afterwards.
"So he might yet fly after all, even if he cannot just yet," Temeraire said. "I did not always have the divine wind. Anyway, Lawrence wished it. It would be immoral to leave him behind, as I understand it."
"I don't see what morality has to do with carrying about someone who cannot fly," Iskirka said.
"We have been carried about by the allegiance, ourselves, when we could not have flown all the way," Temeraire said, "and if we did leave him, he would have to starve, as he cannot hunt. Or what if those Bunyips tried to snatch him? He was small enough, when he hatched, that they might have managed it."
"I don't see why you always want to dwell on and on about what will happen with things that are properly none of your affair and far away," Iskirka said dismissively.
Even Granby, to Temeraire's dismay, did not seem to wholly approve. He looked wincingly at Kulingile, and Temeraire overheard him saying to Forthing,
"I don't need to be told how it was. I'm sure Rankin was a brute about it and set his back up instead of explaining properly. I only wish I had been here sooner."
To Lawrence he made no reproach directly, but said with excessive heartiness,
"Well, one never knows in these cases what may happen after all, although we cannot be too slow. Riley can give us a little more time. He must wait for something to do with the monsoon. But, although it is just as well, for there was still no news from England, although Bligh, so perhaps..."
And then trailed off in a very awkward way, and began instead to speak of the Bunyips. It was very irritating, and Temeraire was still tired and sore. There was sand everywhere sand could be, and nothing like enough water to be properly washed, or even to drink as much as he liked. So he was by no means in a happy mood as the men boarded him again.
"I wish," he said to Lawrence, "I do wish that other dragons were not always thinking me peculiar. Not that anyone would value Iskirka's opinion, but it makes one doubtful."
"I hope you never doubt the value of charity," Lawrence said, "regardless of any contrary opinion which you should meet. Do you imagine Iskirka would have concerned herself particularly with the fate of the French dragons, as a consequence of the spreading of the disease?"
"No," Temeraire said, and looking slantwise asked, "Lawrence, then you are quite sure that we have done as we ought?"
"Very sure," Lawrence said. "And consider, my dear, a week ago his imminent death was certain, and now he is eating well and steadily gaining weight, and he was of material use in extracting you from the quicksand. I must think his prospects of further improvement are high."
That was not precisely what Temeraire had meant, but he was very cheered to know that Lawrence felt the two acts were connected in such a way and equally necessary. He had wondered sometimes if Lawrence might have had some regrets, some feeling of disappointment, that Temeraire had asked so much of him. He did not at all mind bringing Kulingile along, or carrying him forever, if it should mean Lawrence were not distressed. And, he suddenly realized to his consolation, if he were doing so, then it was not really as though Domaine was not his own any more. If Kulingile was to be always riding with him, then it was more as though he was part of Temeraire's crew himself.
"And," he told Kulingile, who listened intently, "if we should see some action, I think you might be of very real use, as no one might board while you were on my back, if only you can contrive not to grow very much more."
"Well, I will try," Kulingile said, but then he took the second half of the lizard in front of him and threw his head back and swallowed the whole thing at once, so that it travelled down his throat as a distended lump, as much as to say, "Look how much I have eaten."
"That is not going to help," Temeraire said, exasperated.